Here we are.
Here we go again.
We are live and hoping that people tune in when this is rebroadcast, because I was all caught up in a project today, the past couple of days, that I was trying to finish, and I did no blasting of this out on Facebook or any advertising.
I had a similar problem, and I don't usually work with Facebook, so I usually Instagram and didn't get my act together, because I've been likewise dealing with some stuff, projects and things going on that are a little bit hectic. What's going on there? What do you have?
We did have one viewer when the show started, and I suspect I know exactly who that was.
Is mom watching the show again?
Of course she's watching the show.
She's watching the show. Hi, mom.
Hi, mom.
Hi there.
She's our most loyal customer.
If you have any comments or suggestions, you can type them right in. Just whatever you would like us to discuss.
Or you can yell from the living room and we'll hear you. I don't know if you noticed this, but the weather outside is frightful.
I know there's probably some people not loving this, but I like a nice snowstorm. So this is fun for me. I can be inside. I'm lucky. I don't have to drive anywhere. So I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
Are you, or does it freak you out?
I've been in California for the past 10 years. So, you know, I mean, I went to boarding school for 3 years in Lake Placid, New York. I skied. I went camping in 20, you know, overnights in below zero.
Right.
Now I'm a big sissy.
You just don't like it. Is it the cold or the snow or all of it? You just don't like it.
It's the inconvenience. It's the aching of the back and the joints.
No, brother.
Yeah, I'm an old man now. Things start to hurt, you know.
All right. Well, just look out the window, though. It's awful pretty.
It's
really beautiful to look at.
I don't appreciate beauty, though.
And I think, you know, in a world that's growing increasingly warm, it's nice to know that at least it still can snow on occasion.
What about Christmas shopping? Are you doing lots of Christmas shopping and all of that?
I'm out in all the malls and going out in public to to celebrate a holiday that I don't understand anymore, that has seemed to be lost in consumers. That's a different topic. But no, I'm not finished my Christmas shopping. I'm a little behind, but thanks to some online gee-whizzery, I'm sure we can make it happen. How about yourself? Where's your Christmas shopping at?
I'm done with almost everything except I sent you an email asking for, you know, some advice about your lovely bride, I think. But I haven't heard back about what.
Great. Thank you. You're calling me out on the show. Now that you've I've clearly wronged you somehow. I don't know how I've done that. I'm just your pinata. I apologize. I have an excuse. Now this is good. Were you going to do something with that?
With this?
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. I'm going to do this with it.
Oh yeah, okay.
And then you said piñata, so I started drinking tequila. That's how things go.
Well, wonderful.
But while it's snowing and cold outside, we get to journey to lovely Florida this evening.
Well, lovely. It's Florida.
It is Florida. I don't know how lovely it is.
Not in this movie.
Not in this movie. So
I frankly was maybe a little disappointed there wasn't a tad more lovely Florida in this movie, but that's another topic.
Yeah, there isn't a lot of lovely Florida. So I'm really, really I had no idea what to expect. And you know how I feel about this character and these books, right?
Sure do.
And we'll get to that. But I had no idea what to expect from the movie. And I'm really, really curious what you thought, because I had some very strong feelings about it.
I had no idea what to expect. I'm, of course, curious what you thought, because I know how you feel about Travis McGee, the character on which this movie is based, and the first book of a very famous and beloved series. This is basically the same plot as that book. Yeah.
Uh huh. I believe.
Hey, there's mom.
There's mom.
Okay. Yeah. From what I looked online and what I remember, it's the plot of the first book essentially. And I know how you feel about it. So I'm really curious because I had a pretty strong reaction as well. And not, you know, like there's a lot to say. Let's just say there's many, many things to say.
Well, I'll dive in because if like both of us are sitting here like going, I don't want to say anything.
I don't want to be first. I'm not. I don't want to go first.
I will dive in. Do you remember? Do you remember Kevin Nealon's review when he was doing the movie reviews on Saturday Night Live? Do you remember that?
Yes. Well, were they movie reviews or were they?
Well, he was a movie critic, and then one night when he was the movie critic, he said, "I'm going to review some porno films," and because nobody's ever seen this. Right. So he says, so I put on, you know, Pizza Boy Cheerleaders in Love, Pizza Boys and Cheerleaders in Love or whatever, you know, some name or some movie. And then he says, and he starts off saying, I was appalled. I thought it was terrible. The movie was horrible. The acting was terrible. The script was just non-existent. But after a little while, I got interested. Very interested, and then suddenly I lost interest. And he goes on from there. It's a very funny routine.
Great, but Kevin Nealon routine.
It was a similar experience for me watching this movie, because the first 25 minutes or so, I was appalled, and I sat there with my mouth open, like, what are they doing? This is the worst episode of a bad 70s cop show. Just horrible. And then the murder happens. You know, the woman gets killed about 25 minutes into the movie. The woman who he's rescued at the beginning of the movie. And for me, it's suddenly completely it was as if one group of people made the first 25 minutes and they said, you know what? We don't know what to do. We're going to hand it off to you guys. And I thought some really fascinating stuff happened after the first 25 minutes. Again, uneven, but I have some stuff that there were a couple of scenes that actually kind of knocked me out. So I'm curious to hear what you think.
We're kind of on the same exact page.
Wow. That is amazing to me.
I have to tell you, like, there were sections where I was just like, is this a Tarantino movie? Like, what's this is amazing. There were, you know, I was expecting the worst of this, like the worst parts of this movie. I already felt like I had seen and I was expecting.
Right.
But I wasn't expecting that at least half of this movie was way cooler and more interesting and more fun than I thought it was going to be. And for my money, because we can talk a lot about this, the whole background to this, but my takeaway is that I want to get a Rod Taylor poster for my house now.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some rocking stuff in this movie.
I knew he was cool in a couple of movies. I love The Birds. I'm a big fan of The Time Machine, but let's face it. He didn't do a lot of stuff. And now I'm really confused because I thought he kicked butt in this movie. And I thought, without being the Travis I had in my mind initially at all, he made a great Travis for me. Like by the end, all things considered, I was like, I would see him do this as a series. And I'm sorry he didn't get to do more.
The beginning Travis was, and so let's, Should we go through all the good stuff and then talk about the ridiculous and bad stuff?
Well, I think we should, in case, for instance, mom hasn't seen this movie. and would like to know what it is.
Okay, yeah.
We should tell her.
Because
she might be the only person listening in this snowstorm. We don't know.
Okay, well, I'll go into some background of the books first, and then you talk about the movies.
All right.
So these books, Travis McGee in the books, 21 books by John D. McDonald. And if you look at the cover art of some of these books, you get a pretty clear idea of what they are about. Here is the very first Travis McGee book that I read. And you can really get an idea of, you know, this is a pulp novel in the 50s or 60s. And then, you know, a couple of other ones. You get a great title. They all have a color in them. Every book has a color in the title.
I remember that, yeah.
Girl in the Plain Brown Wrapper. And there is a sketch of, you know, an artist's rendering of what they imagine Travis to look like. And even that is a little better looking than you imagine him to be. I mean, you imagine him to be a great looking guy, but they talk in the books about, I think he cuts his own hair, right?
He cuts his hair with army clippers.
He just buzzes it.
Yeah. He's a very minimalist guy.
Yeah. But Travis lives on a houseboat called a 50-foot houseboat called the Busted Flush in Slip F-18 in Bahia Mar, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And he calls himself a salvage expert. And he says that he takes his retirement in installments, meaning he doesn't work because he's got some money in the bank. And when that money runs low, he starts combing through the newspapers, reading stories of crime or people who've been ripped off and stuff. And then he approaches those people and he says to them, basically he says, it approaches people who can't get back what they've lost through legal means. Law or society has let them down. And he goes to them and he says, I'll get that back for you for half its value, which is better than nothing. And he does that and then lives off whatever that is until he needs more money. And so that's his story. We never find out where he comes from. You get the sense that he was... I mean, he really knows how to handle himself in the books. And you get the sense that maybe he was a Korean War vet, maybe World War II, but that he was, you know,
I always got the feeling he was at least a Marine or ex-Marine or some whatever early Special Forces thing,
right?
Like Navy SEAL, whatever they had early on, he would have been a part of.
So that's his story. And interestingly enough, none of the books are about that. That's all his background. And what the books are about is in those times between his jobs, when he's just enjoying his life and taking his retirement, he, of course, always runs into a woman in trouble, a woman on the bottom who's been done wrong by some really bad guys.
Ain't it always the way?
It's the story of my life. But the problem is that when I see it, I get scared and I run.
You're not as capable as Travis McGee.
No, not in any, in my head I am.
Even his name is capable. My God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Capable guy.
He with a vengeance. I mean, he hates to see a woman done wrong, and with a vengeance, he takes these women in and then they always end up getting killed. And then he takes vengeance. And then while he's taking vengeance, there's usually another woman who shows up who goes on the boat with him at the end of it.
That's the part of this movie that I just thought was so hysterically funny. And like, it was like a low rent James Bond thing where there's just the idea that back then, and this is obviously in the books too, and it's in this film for sure, because that culture was alive and well in 1970, when this was 1970, You know, there's just was always a lady around, and and the amount of effort and energy that go in these films goes into like this guy and his women friends, and it's just, it's so strange how much like love is discussed and talked about in these movies, these really macho films from this time. It's so funny. But how old were you? You were
I was in college,
teenager when you were when you started. Okay, you were in college.
No, I was in college when I started reading the college or law school, and I buzzed through them.
I remember that you did, and I remember that you, I knew that you were reading this new kind of material that I didn't, because I was really into sci-fi and horror stuff,
right?
And you were really into this detective stuff, and I was like, I remember one day just being like, "Hey man, give me the best. What do you think I'd like?" Like, and you were like, "Oh, I got one. I think you like," and you handed me this one, and it was this for it was the one you showed me. And
Deep Blue Goodbye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it really blew my mind. And I think you knew that I was a big Magnum PI fan.
Yes.
And you knew that, and you knew that there was a definite lineage from this book to Magnum. Yeah. Like I felt like watching this was watching, you know, the birth of Magnum in a way, because it's the same kind of guy. It's the same stories. And I think they must have been inspired by Travis McGee.
Well, and I relied heavily on this in my novel, in the idea of wanting to set somebody up who is not rich or anything, but set in terms of where they live. You know,
yeah.
I constructed a whole backstory for my guy of where he's done, and he has this place to live. Like my guy has his brownstone that he's the superintendent of. Magnum has the estate that he's
the Robin's estate, Robin Masters estate.
Travis has the busted flush, which he won in a poker game.
It's a classic.
Jack Reacher has the road, you know, but all these guys don't have to worry about home.
Crucial point. And I was also intrigued that there's so many similarities to other characters. Like for instance, I was wondering if Han Solo's relationship to the Millennium Falcon is somehow similar, if Lucas got that idea from Travis McGee novels, because the busted flush is obviously a boat that he got in a gambling, like he won, or that was part of what he got for somebody. So he got a boat.
No, but he won the busted flush in a card game.
Okay. Well, that's fantastic. But they make a point in the movie anyway, not having read all the books. I know that in the movie, it's clear when she asks him, like, why do you have this crazy bathroom? Like, why do you ex-Marine dude have like a gold bathroom with like mirrors in it? He goes, cause it's not my boat, man. I won this boat. And that one interchange says a billion things about him and like things click into place. And I remembered it from the novel and feeling like there's this classic thing about, you know, there's a free spirit who has just enough to just kick ass, and that's all they need. They just need enough to survive and kick ass. And that's what he does so beautifully.
Now, the place where I felt like they didn't capture his character in the first 25 minutes of the movie before she's murdered was they really dive into the, you know, that he, in the books, he talks about being a guy who's taking his retirement in installments, but you don't picture that retirement being a, ooh, hey, happy-go-lucky dude. I picture that retirement, and the way it feels in the books is a guy like a special forces guy who has seen too much and been through too much, and now he's kind of done and stepping away from the world. Not a guy who's, and it's very juxtaposed to the houseboat of the Alabama Tiger, who they turn into a woman in this movie, but in the books, it's a guy who's got the world's longest floating, you know, endless floating houseboat party.
Jane Russell in this film. One of my favorite things in the movie. I loved it so much.
How does that happen? Yeah. In the books, it's a guy who's got this houseboat that has a party going on it 24 hours a day forever. It never stops. And Travis is not part of that. He views it from afar. And so all of the stuff on the boat with the girl dancing, and I'm sorry, Theodore Bacall teaching, doing the photo session with Susie Kendall, and where he's trying to tell her like how to flip her hair was one of the most bizarre things. You know, here's this, you know, Jewish guy who sings the International and on folk songs and was a card-carrying communist and is a Jewish communist folk singer, and he played Tevye.
And they offered him a lot of money. What are you going to do?
He's doing this, and it was like, and yeah. Theo, I knew Theo pretty well when I was a kid. He lived across the street from us at Bank Street. After he and dad did The Russians Are Coming together, I used to run across the street at, you know, 8 years old and sit with his wife, Rita, and hang out with them. And they'd give me cookies after, you know, cookies and milk after school. And he was, you know, this old Jewish fellow is telling you stories about the old country and then the Yiddish stuff. And then he's
here. He is living it up.
Yes. Maybe they thought because he played the Russian captain in The Russians Are Coming that there's something nautical about him.
He just looked okay in the hat. So they're like, just get that guy.
I couldn't believe what I was watching.
That was pretty funny. Since I was expecting just a dumpster fire of a movie, when I didn't get that, I was so pleasantly surprised that I truly enjoyed myself watching it. So even the stuff that was like Samurai Cop was great, and I accepted that. And there were definitely some things in it that were like from Samurai Cop, like some of the stupidest fight scenes in the world. There's some Star Trek fighting. There's like a, I don't know if you have that clip or can play it, but I was amazed at that.
Okay, but did you think all the fighting was bad?
No, I didn't. It's not that I thought it was. Here's my point is that it was clumsily. It was a very clumsily handled, but it showed signs of it looked a lot more real and like it hurt, like it was messy and the fights were very messy, which were cool. And he got beaten up in this movie.
That's what I like. The fights looked like people got hurt, things broke.
In terms of like effects and staging for what we have today, it's like a Star Trek. It looks a little bit like a Star Trek episode.
Yeah. But it also, to me, a little bit more like they put a camera on a real fight in a stateroom where guys like just beat
each other up.
So you want to watch the stunts clip is the one that it's called.
Well, if you can do both, I think this one gives a good example of something.
Well, let's start with that one. Here we go. Do you want to set it up?
You're not, if it's not the stunts one.
It's the stunts one.
No, if you can play the other one.
Oh, I can play the other one. Okay.
Play the other one. This is when they this is how ridiculous. This is the ridiculous part of this movie. There's a point where they go to the Caribbean and they take a plane to meet this this cruise liner that's down in the islands, and they're going to do this thing where they get back at the villain of the piece of this movie, and they're going to meet him at the airport before he's there. And this is complicated shenanigans going on. But when they arrive, the three of them arrive, there's this music break and a tourism board commercial in the middle of this movie. That's one of the funniest things I've seen in a while.
But before we go to that, let me just very quickly summarize for people the plot. Travis and his friend Meyer, he's got this friend who's, you know, Theodore Bacall, some old Jewish guy, lives in a boat near him. They're friends. They hang out. They're fishing under a bridge in the middle of nowhere in the Everglades or whatever. And a body is thrown off the bridge, a beautiful young woman with a weight tied around her ankles. And she plops into the water and they see it. And Travis dives in and rescues her. And it turns out that she was involved with some very bad cats in some sort of you know, scheme to rip off money from rich men, and she wanted out, so they killed her by throwing her off the bridge. Now he's rescued her, and they go off for 25 minutes, several days covered in 25 minutes of just fun on the boat with the girl I rescued.
Yeah. Where the near murder is completely forgotten about. Forgotten,
yeah.
By and all then parties.
She goes back to her apartment because she needs money. And he says, well, let me go instead of you. You know, it could be dangerous. No, no, I'll go. And she goes back to the apartment. And of course, she gets murdered. And that's when the movie shifts gears and he's going to avenge this murder. And the rest of the movie is him going after the two guys and the other woman who were involved in this thing where they go on a cruise boat and they rip off old men. So here's them going to Nassau. This is
them arriving in Nassau
to hook up with the cruise boat that the bad guys are on.
Here yeah, let's enjoy or this.
One of the bad guys.
I don't know why that's so funny. This killed me. It's like they're a happy family. I just think it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen, and you know, so this movie has, it's like, it's literally like they were like, well, you can come and shoot on the island, but we have to have 5 minutes of a commercial in the middle of your movie or else. So they're like, okay. It's just them hanging out together, and it's just the three of them, which brings up another interesting point. I don't know if you noticed that the theme song, did you recognize the theme song?
I don't know what it was, but I kept saying, I know this song. I know this.
Do you know why you know it? Do you know why you know it?
Why?
Because it is the theme to Three's Company.
No. No. It's...
Yes. It is. It is. And that's why you thought it was familiar.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Music by John Carl Parker, who did a lot of television. A lot of television. You can tell. He did Dallas, Trapper John MD, Barnaby Jones, Chips, Police Story, Cannon, Gunsmoke. I mean, you name it.
Oh, this guy did it.
And he could not write that. That's like what he could do. And I don't think he wrote the theme to the Three's Company, but he did. That is the theme to Darker Than Amber.
My gosh.
I kept on expecting Norman Fell to pop out of a couch.
Oh no. Oh my God. Well, so where did you, what was the exact point for you in the film where you suddenly stopped and said, because there was a very specific point where I stopped and said, holy shit, that is an amazing scene.
I know what it was. It was for me, the diner scene.
Yes. Out of another movie, an incredibly well-crafted scene with that woman is amazing.
Janet is her name. I wrote her name down. Janet McLaughlin playing Noreen.
You look at her IMDb. She was in everything for a long time. You'll recognize.
She did a lot of work.
Watch this.
And she's in what, Sounder too, right? I think I saw.
And the
incredible scene, and like that's the moment where the movie comes alive and the character comes alive, and it's really intense, and it's like it starts to take on this Billy Jack quality.
Yeah,
you know, this Billy Jack thing that he's got going, this vengeance seeker, you know.
Yeah. To describe it for people, there's a woman who's a housekeeper at the apartment complex where the murdered woman lived, and he sees her when he goes to look at the murdered woman's apartment, but she leaves, and he tracks her down in her neighborhood. And she doesn't want to talk to him because he's a white guy in her neighborhood. And he convinces her to give her, they have a mutual friend. He says, call him, he'll vouch for me. And he convinces her to go to a diner, and they walk into the diner, and it's all white people in the diner. And this is Florida in 1970. And the first thing you notice is that they walk in and everybody looks at them, and they get to their booth, and he waits for her to sit, and then he sits, and that it's this two shot of them at the table, and you see the torso of the waiter come by, and the waiter throws a menu down in front of her, just flings it on the table, and then hands a menu to Travis. And that was the moment I rewound it. I said, was that just on it by accident? And you're like, no, that was, that was storytelling.
And that's, yeah. And that's when it really, at its best, it took on a lot of interesting commentary and also this really interesting kind of Tarantino vibe. I mean, it really had these moments of real cool, like 60s, 70s, like way cooler stuff than I thought. And then when he confronts the guy, the second guy who comes to the table to give them trouble.
Right. That's great. When he takes the guy by the ear and slams his head into the table.
And just holds him there.
Yeah. Holds him there and continues his conversation.
That's so great.
Grinding the guy's ear into the edge of the tape, like really hurting the guy. And he's just sitting there calmly saying, no, you and I are going to, we're going to finish this conversation like civilized people.
Yeah.
And then he makes her leave. And then I love the shot of her leaving. He says, you know, I'll just walk out to the car. You'll be okay. And I'll meet you out there. And they follow her out to the car. And you don't see the aftermath. You see the aftermath inside the store through the window. He stands up and you see him talk to the guy for a second, but you don't hear what's said. And I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool filmmaking. It's really cool. In that moment, it just takes on this whole other resonance, and it's really well shot. You know, like, honestly, it's hard to tell what's going on here because the version we saw, it's on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
So. It's as you saw, it's copied from a VHS. It's a mess and it's not in the right aspect ratio. So you can't really tell what this movie really would look like. It's probably a lot cooler looking than you thought.
Probably. Although I found it in the right aspect ratio, but the quality was much
so worse. Bad. This is terrible.
Yeah.
And you know, there was things about there, like some of it's so frustrating because the depiction of Travis's world down there was so much, it was just like Walt Disney shoddy version, like that the Scottish harbor master and all these weird like ass that were like literally out of a Disney movie.
Yeah.
And then there's this kind of like risque adult, you know, murder thriller thing going on. It the whole thing was so strangely mixed together.
Well, there was that weird juxtaposition of when he goes down to identify her body. And
another great scene. That's great. Another scene where I was like, okay, this movie's incredible.
The corners
the morgue scene.
pulls the body out in the morgue and pulls the sheet down, and you don't see the body, but he does. And then he notices, then the coroner's assistant says something like, you know, you'd think somebody would come forward and identify her. I mean, look at the way she's built and all that. And he gives that guy hell, you know, you show the face. And
it's great.
But then a couple of minutes later, he's in the lingerie shop, you know, so we see his coat, you know, you don't look at a naked dead woman, but in the lingerie shop, when the woman is changing and it's the only nudity in the movie, woman changing to try on some lingerie when he's in the lingerie shop, trying to track down the dead woman's real name. And she doesn't have the curtain closed all the way. He's got no problem looking at a naked live woman, basically peeping Tom, you know, like.
There's some weird stuff that happens, man. There's some weird stuff. And then, you know, I mean, the fact that he falls in love with this murdered girl, like the girl gets killed very early in the film. And the second half of the movie is him trying to avenge this death. And you get the feeling that despite him being a pretty close to the vest, tight-lipped kind of guy, not real emotional, you can tell she really got to him. Like, this was hey, what's up, Stephen Jules? What's happening? That's nice to hear from you, man. I hope you're doing well. I forget what I was saying. I haven't seen him in so long.
You're talking about the nudity.
Falling
in love with
the, and then it's like of course even though he just this woman he was in kind of fell in love with had just died, he still had to have a girlfriend. Like, I mean, it was as if like, well, but I mean, right. I gotta have a girlfriend. I can't not be with a girlfriend. So then he just kind of like finds in this weird twist on Vertigo. He finds an actress in Miami who looks enough like the dead girl that if they put a blonde wig on her and change her costume, she could pass for this dead woman.
Do you know why she looked so much like her?
Well, yeah, because it's the same actress.
Yeah.
Same exact actress.
Yes.
And
strangely makes her look almost exactly the same.
But interestingly, making it so much like this cool Vertigo reference.
Yeah.
And like, it's clearly on point because the first time after she makes the transformation and she reveals herself to him as the blonde who looks like the original girl, they're on top of a church.
The tower.
Is exactly what happens in Vertigo.
Yeah, exactly. Vertigo reference.
Yeah. So many smart things in this movie and so many really, really, really dumb things in the same movie. Like I it makes your head spin. That other scene I loved where he, gets taken out by the bodybuilder guy to dig his own grave before he's going to get killed.
Great sequence
when the dog comes up and that whole interchange with that little dog that comes up and I think more than almost any protection he does of the female characters in the movie, the way that Travis sticks up for that dog says so much about his character because you can tell he's not using the dog as a device to get away from the bad guy.
No,
he's literally just saying, don't mess with the dog. Like you can shoot me, but don't just pick on a stray dog. That's just not going to happen.
And you don't kick a dog.
You don't do it. And his, I thought Rod Taylor sold that part of the character so believably. I just wasn't expecting him to bring it. You know, I just wasn't. Not that I didn't think he was a good actor, but I just didn't think he had the grit. But I think he got this at this point in his career where it looked like he didn't give a damn anymore. He was almost like, look, I've done this. I can probably go back to Australia and be a star. I don't know. I don't care. Let's just. And he really seemed to embody a way tougher guy than I thought. Taylor seems like a pretty tough dude. Like he seemed to do a lot of his own stunts in this movie. And
yeah, that fight in the stateroom.
Yeah, it's really messy and looks really dangerous.
And it was all him. I don't think there was a, it did not look like there didn't, was a it looked like any part of that.
It looked like both him and what's that guy's name? William Smith, who's one of the great classic that guys. And this was, as far as I know, the first thing he could have done. He was such a young dude in this.
He biggest did an amazing guy. Drunk in this too. I was really kind of amazed at how that's, you know, so many actors just screw it up when they have to be drunk. And I felt like he nailed it.
He was surprisingly good and effective in it. And, you know, for a guy that was known to be like the king of the B movie bad guys for a period of time.
Yeah.
You know anything about him?
No.
Interesting. Interesting fellow from Missouri. He started out as a military guy. He entered the service in the Korean War. He learned five languages and landed in the NSA, and worked there towards his doctorate until he started acting and he got bored with it and he just decided to become an actor.
Jesus.
Yeah.
The thing they do at the end, because she has this line about him and that stupid hairpiece he has. Now,
that wasn't a hairpiece.
She talks about how terrible his hairpiece was.
I'm like, the best hairpiece I've ever seen.
Hairpiece, that's his hair. That's
I would like that to have that hairpiece.
Yeah, that's the guy's hair. That's not a hairpiece. And then at the end,
the reveal, it was
he gets the hairpiece taken off, and it's the.
It's like an Adam Sandler movie. It was like in your life. Hubie Halloween out of nowhere, which I'm a big fan of. So not to disparage Hubie Halloween. That's a film I could talk about all night long, but there's another character moment, little character moment with an actor who sells it so beautifully. And I'm wondering if you can think of who I'm thinking of. Not an actor that you'd necessarily know the name of, but there's a moment.
A moment that gets sold. Is it the Cuban waiter?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
it is. Such a great, great little moment with him. And what an actor.
Echoes the scene. It's a great reveal of his character in that the thing that he's fighting for with the black maid character is in that he
a bit,
gives a shit about the underdog. Always.
He really just seems to really genuinely have a lookout for people who are getting power abuse at all times. That guy was great. Oswaldo Calvo, his name was, did a lot of work, but it's a great moment. An example of what you can do with one line of dialogue. To me, it's so full of stuff because he has this moment where he's a waiter. He's bringing a drink to the bad guy, this horrible dude played by the guy we were just talking about, William Smith. And William Smith berates him and abuses him publicly and humiliates him and calls him a derogatory name and really emasculates him in front of a whole crowd of people at the restaurant. And he takes it in, like you see the waiter take it in, and he goes back to the bar, and you know, Travis says, you know, checks in with him. He's like, okay, that was whatever, that wasn't so cool. And then they help each other, and he gives him some money to get him drunk. But he just had this guy, this actor, has this one moment where he's so sick of it. And you can see that he's just sick of so many things. And it's in one line, he brings something to life. So I don't know. I just, I'm glad that we can mention this guy's name on the show because, you know, we've all been there. You got one line. Can you make it memorable?
He had, it has a surprising social conscience, this movie.
Despite all the weirdly James Bondy kind of like casual chauvinism of it, it has a moral social conscience. It does. It's weird. It's a weird combo because it's definitely like a grindhouse movie.
Yeah. I also found the I found the scene in which Vanjie gets killed terrifying.
Really messed up.
The way they handled that sequence.
It's really messed up.
And a couple of other things that I loved were the shot from one of the things they do for people watching is Travis and Meyer mock up the weight that they had tied around Vanjie's ankles. They mock it up with a similar shoe and seaweed. And on the cruise ship, they plant it in the bad guy's bathtub in water so that it'll freak him out. And the way you end up seeing it is it's a shot from inside the bathtub, underneath the weight, through the water. So it's this blurry thing. And you see him walk in and look down into the bathtub. And I thought that shot was
great.
Spectacular.
It was great. Wasn't that the actual dumbbell, though? That was the actual...
That's right. It was the actual
dumbbell that they tied to her ankle to weight her down.
Right.
And when they rescued her, they brought it back and they kept it. And you realize what I also love, there's a little detail in it where you see, you know, obviously they plant the dumbbell in the guy's cabin on the boat, but they had to bring it all the way down there to do that. So you realize Travis has been carrying like a 40-pound dumbbell in a gym bag with him, which you see him give to a guy at the airport. He's like, here's a 40-pound dumbbell. But you don't know what's in the bag. You just know they've shown you give this guy, and then it all plays out. Really, really cool. That was really, really cool.
Another shot that was amazing was when he goes to talk to that doctor when he wants to go see the body in the morgue.
Mm-hmm.
There's a shot of him meeting up with his friend, the doctor, outside, and it's a walk and talk. And it goes on. And this is another one I rewound to watch. It's a walk and talk, and they're walking and walking and walking. And suddenly,
cut inside.
Suddenly a sliding glass door opens, and they walk, and you realize that the entire shot has been with a telephoto zoom from inside a hospital. Yeah.
But they do something weird with the sound where they cut their dialogue out when you see that you're in a hospital and you they zoom back far enough to see the doors, you lose their conversation, which is very awkward.
Very, very strange.
Interesting footnote. The director of this movie, who we've not talked about yet, I can't remember the guy's name now. It's terrible.
The movie was directed by somebody.
And that man's name was Robert Klaus or Klaus. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. But anyway, he's famous for being the director of a little movie called Enter the Dragon.
Right.
And but you know, Susan
Campbell was also in Enter the Dragon, wasn't she?
Was she? Let's find that out. That's possible. I don't know. I'm not. This is not my wheelhouse, as they say.
Somebody in this movie was also. There are people in this movie who were also in Enter.
It's possible. I'm going to just be wasting time here looking at IMDb, but the director certainly was. He was deaf, apparently, couldn't hear, and so had to rely on a second assistant. It does. And it explains that weird audio transition. I mean, he's an amazing director for a lot of things, but literally couldn't hear and had to have his AD tell him what if actors like said the lines okay, if they got through it. So he was like,
wow,
you know, it must have been really, really challenging to work with a crew and stuff and communicate, I guess, unless he had people that signed or I don't know, but yeah. And he didn't direct that many things. He directed he has 23 credits. A few of them are shorts, some TV stuff. Didn't do too many movies. But he did do Gymkhana, which I recommend highly if you haven't seen it.
Oh, I haven't. Okay.
That's Robert Klaus. Interesting guy. What
about funny moment in the beginning of the movie when she's thrown off the bridge? They're fishing and he actually hooks her, right?
She falls on the tackle line when she falls into the boat.
So Oh, yeah. I thought he hooked her when she went off the bridge, and that's why his, right? His.
Oh, maybe that's true. I thought, anyway, I.
So she's got his lure deep in her thigh, and he's got to, he and Meyer have to take it out. And Meyer explains, this is going to hurt. You're going to have to, we're going to have to push the barb all the way through, snip it off, and then pull it out. And she lies there and takes it all without making a sound,
and refuses a drink too.
And that's sort of how Travis's first clue into that this woman has been abused, because she sits there through this pain without any reaction. But then they're cleaning the wound, and Travis takes the bandage that he's going to put on it, rips it out and has it in his mouth. And then, so a sure way to kill somebody.
Sure. So what they did in the Korean War, it's going to work here. Come on.
Yeah, it's going to work. Oh,
hey, Maddie, there's Maddie Blake.
Maddie.
He says, he's throwing it down. Hey guys, big fan. How do you rank this film as compared to his films with Bruce Lee? Do you think he and Klaus would have kept working together? Ah, heartbreaking to think of Lee could have done. Thanks. You know, interesting, Manny. I've seen Enter the Dragon for sure. I haven't followed those films. Jim Cotter for Life for Real. I haven't followed those films as much as I probably you have. But I feel like there's enough here, and there was certainly enough cool stuff in Enter the Dragon, although I know that was a really compromised shoot from what I'm told, to see that I think he would have gone on to do just amazing things. I don't really know what happened. I don't know why. I think he started directing late in life, and I don't really know. But I mean, he got to do Gymkhana, and Gymkhana was, good Lord, Gymkhana was in like a 90 something. So he worked for a long time. I don't know. I think he would have been an ideal guy to keep making movies with Bruce Lee, because he also clearly knew the filmmaking landscape, you know, in Asia, and was able to get kind of really cool camera stuff there. So I don't know. I want to see all of his stuff now. I just don't want to see anything else that's scored by this guy. And this music really was rough.
Another thing that clued me into something about Travis's background is the scene where she comes up behind him and surprises him, and he instantly has her on the ground.
Like, look, do you have that clip?
He takes, yeah.
Let me show that. Before you show that, I just want to say that we were just talking there. That was Maddie Blake, our friend, and my co-host, or I am his co-host on Rated P for Paranormal, which was that other show we were talking about before. So Maddie, thank you so much for checking in tonight. That's really awesome. This next clip is the funniest thing I'd ever seen, except it's kind of shocking too. So just so you're forewarned, she's okay. She's okay. But this does happen.
Here we go.
Girl, never, ever come up behind me like that.
It's just insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's
so crazy. God. I had to watch that like three times. Amelia and I were just shocked. Absolutely shocked. And laughing hysterically, because it is so much more violent than it had to be. Like, it's so over the top.
Except, have you ever heard the story about Jed, my half brother Jed, your brother in
spirit, I don't know. We're not related in any legal way,
but you both have two brothers named Adam and Matthew.
Yeah.
So it's really kind of four brothers. So my mom, my birth mom was married to her fourth husband, her fourth of only four.
Showing some restraint.
Yes. Who was, and if anybody is confused, when I talk about mom with Tony, I'm talking about my mom who raised me, who's downstairs right now. But then sometimes I have to talk about my birth mother, who, you know. Her fourth husband, Carl, was a Vietnam vet. And her son from her third marriage was raised for many years by her fourth husband, who is a Vietnam vet. And you've met Jed many
times. Oh, for sure. Yeah, I love Jed. I've hung out with Jed.
Big dude. He's a big guy.
Is a big and one of the more handsome. He's also one of the more handsome gentlemen in the world. He's a very good looking guy.
Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Like a movie star, like ridiculous.
Movie star good looks.
Yeah.
And a brilliant lawyer. But so when Jed was in high school or college, I think high school, and was already big and was studying Kenpo and like good at some martial arts and stuff, he comes home one day and Carl's in the kitchen and Jed realized that Carl didn't know that he was there. And Carl was in the Rangers in Vietnam. And Jed walked up to Carl behind him quietly and grabbed him from behind, went boo. And the next thing Jed knew was that he was on his back on the floor with Carl straddling him on top of him like that, like ready to do a karate chop to the neck.
And if they had filmed that the way they filmed this, that too would have been the funniest shit you'd ever seen.
Right. But it's also this real clue to where this guy.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. No, I think on paper it works. It's just the way that they actually shot and carried out the stunt is inadvertently hysterical because it looks like she's a Muppet. And you're like, oh, she broke her back on the way down. There's no way she's alive. Like, I thought he just killed her in that scene. I thought she's dead. There's no way she could survive it. It took me out of the movie. It's really funny. And she's fine. She doesn't complain. She just kind of lies there. I mean, after he's like, oh, you don't sneak up on anybody like that. And he goes and he has a cigarette and a drink to calm down. And she just kind of like gets up and walks back into her cabin.
Right. Worst love scene ever.
No. Not the worst love scene. We've already seen that.
Which was the worst love scene?
The 3 Days of the Condor is the worst love.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah, that was the worst.
Second worst love scene ever. Yeah.
Let me see. I think I've covered so much of my stuff.
There's one tiny moment that I think is really, really great. I don't know it, you know, it's for all I know in the book, because it could be a little literary thing, but in that sequence where he has to dig his own grave and that creepy bodybuilder's got the gun and you think Travis is going to get shot, you know, he's not. And he takes the guy out and kills him, and the guy falls, he buries him in the grave. And there's like a dissolve, and it's after the guy's already buried. Travis is just kind of like leaning back and he's looking at this stray dog that had come around earlier. And he like suddenly goes, huh? And he gets scared and he looks down and it looks like something's coming out of the grave. And it turns out that it's a crab, but it's this really weird moment where you think the guy's not dead yet. And it's really creepy.
And I got really creeped out because I thought it was the guy's hand. And I thought we were going to have to see some really bad shovel violence. Like now
I will
in the grave with the shovel.
I find shovel violence to be particularly, I'm still squeamish about it. I don't know why. It can take a lot of things in movies, but shovel violence is truly rough going.
Yeah. Another thing I thought was interesting was, and I don't know if it was a choice or that they were on a real cruise ship in the Bahamas and it was hot.
Yeah.
But they're sweating like pigs in that bar and in the cruise ship. They're just drenched.
They're drenched. I think they were really down there. I think they just went, they looked like they went with a crew and just shot everything on the fly.
Wow.
It really did. Yeah.
Wow.
It looked like some fun down there, man. I wanted to go on that casino boat for sure. I really did.
Yeah. So, you know, in the tradition of what I learned from you and Maddie on your other great show, that a really good movie has two great scenes and no bad ones.
Okay.
Qualify as a great movie. You have to have two good scenes, two great scenes, and no bad ones.
Well, let's say, I don't know if that's exactly correct in the sense that I think maybe what it is in order to be a film worthwhile seeing. Worth seeing. Recommendable.
Two great scenes. And no, well, then by that, this isn't recommendable.
No.
It's got a lot of bad scenes.
No, but here's the thing. I've done some math. I was actually talking with Maddie about this earlier on the show today that we recorded today. But I think, and here's the thing, there are more than two good scenes in this movie.
There are a lot more than two good scenes.
So I think that ends up making up for it. There's actually like five really good scenes.
Okay. And the bad scenes in this movie
are so bad that you got to take away some of the credits.
Well, no, I think the bad scenes in this movie are incredibly entertaining. So,
okay.
They make up for how bad they are.
I can't argue with that because you know how I feel about movies like this. I adore them.
You adore them. And Stephen Jules Rubin says that our dad.
Yes.
Used to tell him that a good movie has redemption.
Well, Stephen, don't ever challenge us on this show about what our dad says. It's bad. It's not going to go well for you. No, you're right. I think that is what my dad says. That's not what I say. I just say it has to have popcorn and a clean bathroom.
But this movie does have redemption.
It does have redemption. It does. It's really about redemption in many ways.
And in an interesting twist, at the end of the movie, when the second beautiful woman, who is actually the first beautiful woman, the same actress,
because Kim Novak
wants to sleep with him, he doesn't because he is still too broken up over Vanjie's death.
Although you do get the feeling that tomorrow is another.
I need tonight to get over it.
Yeah. He'll be okay tomorrow. He'll be over it, which was my big complaint. It's like the main complaint is that Travis is this amazing like knight errant who will like look after women who are in distress and avenge them. But you know, but you got to have a girlfriend. I mean, come on. It's so funny.
Yeah.
So funny.
Yeah. Well, I think we've done this movie. Wish me luck tomorrow.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Why do you need it?
Because I had the second dose of my shingles vaccine today, and when I had the first dose, I was
talk show conversation man. At its most scintillating. Shingles, usually only saved for the second season, is brought in early. What will happen?
Yeah. So so that I'm looking forward to feeling really good tomorrow.
Do you get shingles for a day? Is that what
happens?
You don't
get shingles for a day. You just you can feel fluish for
okay.
You know, you can feel a fever and achy and.
I got you.
I don't think it was a fever. I think it was just achy. I felt. So I'm taking the day off tomorrow. I'm
okay.
Finished my big project today, and tomorrow I take it easy.
Anything? Anything that you'd like to announce? Anything you're doing? Anything currently you'd like to promote or talk about?
No, nothing going on. No, I mean, you know, my screenplay is kicking around.
That's good news.
The screenplay is kicking around. The booze business is moving ahead full steam. We're waiting on our trademark applications, and but we'll have our business plan together soon. I have a date tonight.
Oh, come on.
After
the show. What we have is better than a date. You and I have more than a date.
We do. It's more than a date.
So that's exciting. Very nice.
A nice date. Blake wants to know if I have ever done a fight scene. Now I really want to know why he's asking that.
Is he just asking you privately?
No, I'll put it up there on the screen. Matthew, have you ever done? Now, is he calling me out? Did I say something about this fight scene that shows that I clearly don't know what the hell I'm talking about?
I'm not going to protect you from Matty Blake. I can't.
To get beaten up?
I can't.
I'm Matty Blake. I don't want to go up against Matty Blake.
Oh, no, you don't. I don't. Yeah. But I think you need to answer the man because he's actually asking you a question. He's getting upset. As you're stalling.
He's getting angry and he'll hit me.
You haven't answered his question. It's a simple question.
I have done a fight scene.
Did you do a fight scene or getting beaten up scene?
I've done several getting beaten up scene. I got beat up by Bobby Clohessy in rounding third.
Oof. I'm sure he packs a punch.
He strangled me with a baseball bat.
Oh, he's a big guy. He's a big, scary guy.
He had to strangle me with a baseball bat. And in Moonlight and Magnolias, there was a slap fight, a whole scene where they're trying to work out the slap, how the slap works from Gone with the Wind.
Oh, okay.
And the David O. Selznick character and the Victor Fleming character are demonstrating on Ben Hecht what the slap will be like, and I played Ben Hecht, and they just
I remember this.
Like,
yeah,
oh, it's like this, and they're and I think I was slapped like 14 times in a row, and David Rashi, who is a wonderful actor and a wonderful fellow, does not know how to. He's a very manly man, which means his wrist. His wrist does not do anything remotely like this. His wrist is always like a piece of wood. He didn't know how to slap and like break his wrist as he slapped you.
Oh, okay.
He always just open-handed, stiff wrist.
That's how you slap. I mean, that's really that's a slap.
Maddie's curious. He's not calling me out. He's just curious. I'm still afraid, and I want protection the next time I'm in
Blake is a black belt. He will take you apart and put you back together.
As long as he puts me back together.
No, he's not actually not a doctor, but he'll buy you a drink, okay. Set you on your way. Maddie, not that you're asking me. I don't know why you don't care about my fight scenes, but whatever. Maybe we can talk about them on our show sometime.
I did do a lot of pratfalls. Does that count at all?
Stunt work, I guess, could count. Again, I can't speak for Mr. Blake. I don't know.
I did a lot of like falling through windows and being thrown over couches and stuff like in plays.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Getting thrown through windows. That's neat.
Thrown through a window, just fall, like opening the window and trying to get into the room and then falling through the window.
I did a show with Dad, as you know, for a year in which he shot me in the head and I fly backwards onto my back.
That's right. That's always good.
Nothing weird about that.
I did end up in an emergency room once from doing a love scene. I ended up in an emergency room.
Please tell. Is this a quick enough story to actually tell right now? Because that's
in the love scene. I had to. It was simulated making love.
I would hope it's this play.
And I had to. We were lying on a couch with her on top of me, and then I had to sit up and then pick her up and walk around as if we were making love and walking at the same time. And it was in a Teresa Rebeck play called The Scene.
So this was culture. This was a cultural event, is what you're saying?
It actually is a pretty good. It's a pretty good play. I mean, Tony Shalhoub did the play off Broadway. So
what you're describing sounds amazing.
Yeah. One night I compressed a nerve in my spine.
Oh.
And my entire right leg went numb.
Oh, no. That is horrible. Did you collapse onto the stage?
I didn't. I finished the show and then went to the emergency room afterwards, and they were sticking needles in my leg saying, "Do you feel this?" And I'm like, No, I don't feel that.
No. That's terrible. Oh, sure. God. Yeah. Stephen Jules Rubin asked, "Hey, Stephen, I did do one fight scene. I got into a fight with Jason Ritter in Person of Interest, and it was ridiculous. I'll tell that story sometime. That was an embarrassing day for me. I'll tell you that much.
Right.
This wasn't stunting, Maddie. This was humiliation.
Stunting.
Here's the thing. When you hit like by middle age and you're an actor and you still got some vanity or whatever, and you go to the set and you go and you're walking around, you've got this kind of fight scene to do later, and you look up and you see a guy and you're like, why is that like fat old white guy wearing my costume?
Yeah.
And you go, oh, that's my stunt double. That's what I look like. You're like, wow, it's a heavy moment. It's like, that's your double. That's your doppelganger.
Yeah. Well, when I got shot on 2 years ago on some show.
It's probably Sneaky Pete.
No,
it was anything like murder, my experience.
Some murder show. Yeah. It got shot and, what's the serial killer show?
There's every show is a serial killer show. God. Mindhunter.
No, it's a network.
Hunt Mind.
His Mandiness was on it.
Homeland.
Yeah. Anyway, when I got shot, they're like, "Oh, don't worry, we're gonna have mattresses. You're gonna fall on a mattress and everything." And we get to the set and they're doing a low angle where you see the whole room, and the stunt coordinator's like, "Oh yeah, we're not gonna have any mattresses." So I had to fall down like 15 times on the floor.
Yeah, I had one of those too. It's not anymore. It's no cool. It's not cool.
No.
I mean, I'm not naming names, but it was not an experience I enjoyed.
Yeah. All right. Well. Oh, we haven't figured out what we're doing next week.
What is going on? Well, we have to get on top of this.
We do. We have to decide before the show what we're going to watch next week.
Okay.
I had a actually, no, that's a TV movie, though, so we can't do that. There's one other Travis McGee movie.
Which is there?
With Sam Elliott.
Oh, Sam Elliott. Isn't that a TV movie?
It's a TV movie.
We don't do that.
We're better than that.
Yeah, we don't do TV movies, man. Let's do a film called. We've gone all over the map. We've been in the 80s. We've been in the 60s. We've been all over the place.
We can do whatever we want.
Should we do an old movie?
Yeah, you know what I wanted to do, but I don't think you can find it anywhere.
What?
Forbidden Project.
The Forbidden Project?
The Forbidden Project?
You know I think that's on Amazon. I've seen it, yeah.
It is?
I think it's on Amazon. It might be. Let me look it up. Colossus. You spell it wrong, it doesn't tell you.
With Eric Braeden.
Yeah, there you go. Eric Braeden, Susan Clark. It's available on Amazon. No, on disc only. It's not.
All right. You decide something fabulous.
Something fabulous, huh? Let me call up our little list. Why don't I do that? Why don't you tell some funny stories, Matthew, while I look up this list of movies that we want to talk about? Documents.
Documents?
Documents. Two brothers. Movie list. Movie list. There it is. In a world of movies.
Two brothers can't go outside.
I think that we should see Do we see something Christmassy?
Ew.
To totally avoid it, right? Go the other direction completely. Yeah. Let's do...
Unless it's like a horror movie, like with a killer Santa.
No.
Are there any like Friday the 13th kind of...
Yeah, maybe, but that's going down a bad road. Let's do... Joel
Rubin wants to know how the not live coaching is going. Actually, it's going really well. I teach an online audition and self-tape class, as does Tony. We have competing classes. It's horrible that we have competing, that we're competing with each other. It's a horrible thing. Theirs is better than mine, though.
What?
Well, I'm
gonna crazy wait. Talk. Crazy talk. Everything I'm looking up is coming out. I really thought that Strange Days would be a good idea, because then I thought we could get my friend Joe, who was in Strange Days, Joe Erla, to be on the show, because his birthday is like Christmas.
Well, then let's do that.
But it's not available. I don't know where to see Strange Days. It's a big, big damn problem. So I have to find out where I can see that first. How about, let's see, how about Executive Decision?
Executive Decision. All right. We're watching Executive Decision.
Is it available? Let's see. Executive Decision. It is available to rent, at least on Amazon Prime.
All right. So if you are out there and you are watching and you don't want the movie spoiled for you, you have until next Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern to watch Executive Decision. In the meantime, please tell all of your friends about this amazing show, which will soon be available also on podcast. Right?
Yes. I thought it was a podcast. Wait a minute. What's going on?
No, people are looking at you now.
What?
If you had known that, you would have...
Hand check.
No tubing here.
That would be exciting. This would be great to have as a podcast.
We're gonna do it as a podcast. And when we go the podcast route, we are gonna trickle out releasing. I shouldn't say that after.
Don't cut your losses.
We're gonna re-release all of the previous episodes, which I think are 21 episodes at this point. Once we get the podcast established,
they'll be available too. Yeah. And we promise when we start doing the podcast, we're going to get the show down. We're going to have it down
after unprofessional as it is
40, 50 episodes. We're going to know what we're doing. Yeah. And I think that'll be a very different show. So,
all right.
Thank you for tuning in, everybody. Nice to hear from you, Stephen. And Maddie, of course, as always.
Thank you for watching, and tune in next week for Executive Decision.
We're going to be so sorry we picked this, but what can we do? It's done. It's done deal.
Great. See you later. All right.
You've been listening to the Arkin Brothers Talk About Movies. That's my brother, Matthew Arkin.
And that's my brother, Anthony Arkin. And we are interesting, irreverent,
and irrelevant. But you can follow us on Instagram anyway. You can also subscribe to our newsletter and check out our merch.
And you can do it all on our website. Just follow the link on your podcast app.
If you want to know more about Matthew, like if you want to stalk him or something, you can learn more than you'd ever want to know at MatthewArkin.com.
And if you're a fan of my kid brother Anthony, you can find him at Clem Torment on Instagram.